welcome to Recurring Nightmares, episode 20. I am Jeff, joined as always by Chris.
Hey.
And, you know, it's Christmas time. We're going to do our Christmas episode. Yeah, we got two. I'm not a big Christmas movie fan, but since it's my year to pick, I picked the two ones that I like. We're going to review them tonight.
You don't like Christmas movies in general, or
No, I mean,
or like Christmas horror movies.
Christmas horror.
It's tough. It's not my favorite.
It's not my favorite thing to do.
Because Christmas should be happy.
Yeah, you know what? I was thinking that earlier. It's like, you're coming off of Halloween, and it's like a whole month where you watch a ton of horror movies, and then it's just like, I associate like the Christmas season with like not even Christmas movies, but like the big movies of the year, you know.
It's Oscar bait season.
So. Yeah, it's kind of that, and then you get like your big Star Wars or whatever. Yep. I don't know if there is one.
We have The Matrix and Spider-Man both.
So there is
final 2 weeks of the year. So yeah, it's big blockbuster movies.
Meanwhile, I'm like looking forward to the new Paul Thomas Anderson, and there's something else I'm really excited about, but it's slipping my mind right now. Oh, the Spielberg.
West Side Story.
Yeah. Which is funny because I've never seen a West Side Story. I have no idea.
I've not ever watched all of it. I don't like the music from it though, so I'm like not like that's something I have heard. Like it's just cultural osmosis.
Not super
excited for the music of that. So I don't know. I'll probably see it at some. I think one of our friends said it'll be on Disney Plus like in February or something like that. So
I can't say either way. Might give it a shot in the theaters. We'll see. But we do have what we've been watching, and it feels like looking at what we got here, you and I, between the two of us, have seen a decent amount of, well, one of mine is not a huge release, but we've seen some new stuff at the very least, some of it big. What have you been watching there, Chris?
So I guess I'll kick off with the big one I saw over the holiday break. We go to the theater every Thanksgiving, like as a family before dinner. And this year I let the youngest pick the movie. I was sure that she was going to pick that Disney movie Encanto, which evidently is good, but she picked Ghostbusters Afterlife. And I saw that, and that's actually pretty good.
You liked it, huh? I've seen both ways of this.
Yeah, like
extremely positive and extremely negative.
So I'm not a huge Ghostbusters fan either. I guess I should preface. I like the first movie. I think it's a classic film. Ghostbusters 2 sucks. Ghostbusters was 2016 or something like that.
Yeah.
Lady Ghostbusters, that was fine. Like I had,
yeah, I saw that.
It was whatever. It was like it's funny. Ghostbusters is, I guess, inherently a comedy. Like it's not really a horror film. It plays a lot for laughs. It's Dan Aykroyd, Bill Murray. Ghostbusters Afterlife is a direct sequel to the original two Ghostbusters, although they don't really mention Ghostbusters 2 all that much. It follows basically these two kids. You probably know one of them, Finn Wolfhard from Stranger Things. And I think he was in It as well. He's been in everything. And his little sister, Phoebe, they are being moved out to somewhere in the middle. I think it's Oklahoma they're being moved to because their grandfather died and their mom inherited this house. They didn't really know him. He was like kind of he ran off like when she was really young, and their mom didn't really experience her dad. Turns out their dad was Egon from the original film. He went a little kooky because he thought there was like a hellmouth or something in this mountain in like this it's a mine, I guess, in Oklahoma, where he thought that the apocalypse was going to happen. So he was out there being crazy. And it follows these two kids as they kind of like come to learn about their grandfather and the fact that ghosts are real. And it's just fun. Paul Rudd comes in. He plays like a science teacher who wants to get with the kid's mom. And the girl, little girl Phoebe, played by McKenna Grace, she's kind of the star of this. Like, she's fantastic. She looks like Egon. You kind of get like the feel, oh, they were definitely trying to give her that look, like the geeky scientist look. She's fantastic though. Very like, she's good jokes, good line delivery. And it's just like a fun, sweet story. At the end, the original Ghostbusters show up. It maybe caters a little too much to fan service in that. And I think like maybe,
yeah, people that don't like it, that's
yeah, like the last 10 minutes kind of is just like, oh, that, you know, they brought back Dan Aykroyd and Bill Murray, and feel bad forgetting his goddamn Ernie Hudson.
Yeah, yeah.
Who's like he's always the one that everybody kind of forgets, because Winston is, he joined up just to join up, like the other three were all part of it, and poor Ernie Hudson's always kind of forgotten because of Bill Murray and Dan Aykroyd. And they they paced in the guy who played Egon. Like, it's, there's,
yeah,
visual, yeah. Like, he doesn't say anything, but they have like imagery of him as a ghost helping his other three ghost busting pals and his grandkids and daughter fight off the big bad at the end. It's fun though. Like, I don't know. Like, maybe if you're really into Ghostbusters, you might be like, no, like, this is too much. Or you might be like, yeah, I loved it, because it's all the fan service. But I thought it was fun.
You're someone who's just, see, I'm like more like you with Ghostbusters. It's not like a sacred cow to me. Like, it's right. Just
like, this was cute. Like, it was like a, you know, had a good emotional core to it. I think like the performances are fun. If visually it looks okay. I don't know. It's like, it's not, I think the original Ghostbusters is more like, you know, it's a PG comedy.
Dude, I caught some of the original on TV the other day.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what we were getting away with PG movies when we were kids. Like, oh my God. It's a little
bit raunchy. Like,
it's like a sex comedy. And that's,
yeah. And it's viewed as like a family comedy. Like, it's, that's really weird. Dude.
So, like, the scene I caught was Bill Murray in bed with Sigourney Weaver, and she's like, I want you inside me right now. And he has a great line. He's like, sounds like there's two of you in there already. She's possessed by Zool or something, I think.
Yeah, and, like, they bring that back, Zool and the Keymaster Gatekeeper. I don't know what the hell they were called. But Paul Rudd and the mom, like, end up, like, as them, and there's a... Yeah, there's a couple sex jokes between the kids and the adults there, and it's like, all right. I mean, it's not as raunchy as the original by any means. Like, this is a family movie. There's like a couple jokes for adults here, but yeah, it's like, I don't know. I liked it. It's fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. Go see it. Or maybe don't, maybe wait. Everything's coming. Like, I just saw that Edgar Wright movie just hit.
Yeah.
Streaming. Like, I was like, where did that come from? Maybe I'll rent that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'll let you know about that in a minute. Anything else, you've been watching lately?
I've been watching. Sure. I caught up on the two Marvel movies that are out. Shang-Chi, Legend of the Ten Rings, and Eternals. I'm not going to spend too much time on either one, but Shang-Chi hit Disney Plus, and I was like, all right, like, you know, I wanted to see it, but I wasn't like, I don't know anything about this character at all, like, at all. So I don't really know if I want to go to the theater, and that was when, what was it, the last variant that came out, it was all like, oh, like, you know, it's bad out there. So it was like right around that time. Yeah. And it was like, I'm going to like maybe skip theater for a little bit. And I did up until like Halloween. So hit Disney Plus. I watched it. It is a really good movie. It has a little bit of Marvelism in it. But it like doesn't necessarily tie into like all those other movies tie in so much to each other that it becomes ridiculous. Like it's like you're watching a giant TV. Like this, I think you can watch very much standalone. I think the performances are good. It's basically a kung fu movie, or a martial arts movie, however you want to like kind of approach it. Yeah, there's good wire work, kind of like a.
Lots of flying around.
Yeah, there's like some flying around, some jumping, spinning.
Walking on wires and shit.
Yeah, you know, like all that type of stuff. And there's some good actual, like, there's a great fight scene on a bus that takes place in current day. There's an okay fight, like, on scaffolding on the side of a like a high rise. And then there's, like, the over-the-top final battle where it's, like, you know, these... It's a big army type thing where you got like people with modern weapons fighting, you know, these warriors from the forest, and they're using like magic and shit and like their wushu, and then like dragons show up and like the you know, like Mushu from Mulan, like a dragon like that, like a Chinese dragon comes out of the water. It's pretty cool looking. It's fun. It's like I enjoyed it quite a bit. I was actually surprised because, like, you never know with these Marvel movies. Like, sometimes they are just mediocre garbage.
Are you approaching burnout with them, or were you approaching burnout?
Like, yeah, like, it's funny because, like, we really haven't had any in a year, and it's still, like, Endgame hit, and it was like, man, that was a lot. Like, that was a decade of, like, three films a year that you kind of had to pay attention to understand everything that was going on. And
I was never really on the bus, but I definitely got off the bus after Endgame. Like, all right, let me off the ride.
Yeah, and I like fully understand. I mean, they're obviously building up to something again. It's probably going to be another 10 years of shit. Like, I don't know. I am not nearly as invested as I was previously. And even then, it was just like, this is kind of like a cultural touch point. Like, I kind of prefer DC, like, their characters, Batman, and, like, even though some of that stuff isn't great, but, like, they're at least trying something different often.
Yeah, I prefer them, and I, you know, I'm burned out on all this shit, but I prefer DC.
Yeah.
I really do.
But, yeah, this one feels different, so it was kind of fun.
Yeah, I was going to say, that sounds cool that at least it's, like, you don't need a PhD in Marvel to watch it.
Like that, I think the fight scenes are well choreographed. You know, there is some of that Marvel, you know, sarcasm going on. Like Awkwafina plays like the companion to Shang-Chi. You know, and she's kind of known for being kind of like a you know, comedic piece in films like these. So I think she plays really well, though. I liked it. They're obviously setting it up for another 17 movies of these, but this one's good. I can't say the same about Eternals, though, which is the brand new Marvel movie that is still in theaters.
This is going to be the one. This was going to be the art house Marvel that was going to change it all and close out.
This is a mediocre pile of shit. Like, it's not terrible, it's just so aggressively dull, which is funny because it's a team movie, so you have 10 different superheroes, but I think that might be part of the problem with it is you don't know who any of these people are, and you don't care. It's like they don't really give you a reason to care because it's like they keep pitching back to, oh, they were sent here thousands of years ago to kind of protect the Earth from these foreign entities, but not interfere in humanity. So, like, we're going to fight off these alien creatures that are intent on destroying humanity, but we're not really going to interject ourselves. So they're just kind of like nobodies that exist. I don't know. It's not great. Like, the storytelling is weird. It keeps flashing back to the past because these people have been on Earth for 7,000 years. And it keeps, like, flashing back and forth between different time periods. And the main story is, oh, we have to stop a big cataclysmic event that's going to destroy Earth. And, yeah, like, that's fun, I guess, but I don't care. I don't care about any of these characters. I don't it's, they're obviously setting it up for bigger things in the Marvel universe. Like, these characters, the ones that survive, not all of them do, they're going to play a bigger role, or aspects of their existence are going to play a bigger role in the MCU, but I don't care. It's just meh. It's 2 hours and 40 minutes long. It's so aggressively dull for most of it.
This is, I think, the first Marvel movie to not get a fresh score on Rotten Tomatoes there. Right. And, yeah, all the corner of film Twitter that I follow, anyways, were really cheering on that dropping score.
I mean, it's not. That's not going to be consistent, right? Because, like, that's not going to sustain itself. Because Spider-Man's coming, that's going to be aggressively Marvel. And I mean, it should be fun too, because that's going to tie together all of Sony's Spider-Man films and their fuck ups, which could be interesting to watch.
Yeah.
But it'll be more Marvel.
No, but it's funny because, you know, people like me that don't like these Marvel movies, and, you know, there's a lot of critics, even though these Marvel movies tend to get pretty good reviews, but there's a good segment of critics that are beyond fucking sick of them, and, you know, wish that they would do something different, and now you got one that's different, and everyone's like,
oh, it's different, yeah.
Now we're finally gonna give them bad reviews, I didn't mean like that!
You know? Yeah, it's like it aggressively goes against their formula, and it's very clear. Like, yeah, it's very clear that their formula works. Like you know, say what you will about it. It's not everybody's cup of tea, but their formula works for the mass audience.
Yeah, for sure. Still arguing that
Eternals just doesn't hit there. Like, it tries something different, and it's just unfortunately not great.
Yeah.
So that's what I've been watching, Jeff. What have you been watching?
Not too many new things. Probably the most notable one you already mentioned, the new Edgar Wright film, Last Night in Soho.
Mm-hmm. I was interested in this one. So
I pulled the $20 trigger on the rental on it, so I streamed it.
It's a bit much for me, but
yeah, it's just. It was one of those ones I would have liked to have seen in the theater. So I was like, well, you would have spent at least this much going to see it in the theater. So that's how I talked myself into it.
Sure.
Interesting thing with, I don't like Edgar Wright. Like, I'm not a fan of his movies. And for most of his career, his movies were very popular with people and with critics. And I was just like, I don't know, man. He doesn't connect with me. Interesting thing this year, it seems like, that people have turned on him big time. And I liked this one.
They turned on this movie or just on him in general?
Yeah, like, him. And this movie got, like, mixed. There's people that, you know, really dug it. And there's people that thought it was trash.
Okay.
Like, some critics I really respect were like, this is just not the material for him. Because it's like a psychosexual horror movie, which is not something he's done before. I don't know. I think he handled it fine. The premise is Thomas and Mackenzie is this girl who's, like, obsessed with the 60s. And she lives in, like, the countryside outside of, you know, London, but she moves to London to study becoming a fashion designer. They establish it very early on that she has psychic abilities. Like I think in the first scene, she sees her dead mom in the mirror, and so like she's aware she has these abilities too. And once she gets in London, you know, it's a little overwhelming for her being in the big city. But she starts seeing visions from the past, like not just like, you know, her seeing her mom in a mirror. Like when she goes to bed at night in this place that she's renting, she's having like full on dreams with like full stories where she's following this girl, played by Anya Taylor-Joy, around and getting to know this girl. And if you've seen the trailer, you know bad things happen to this girl, and then our main character starts trying to solve this murder from back in the past. Kind of, I don't know, I think interesting premise.
Good concept, yeah.
Yeah. You know, Edgar Wright, whether you like him or not, he is talented as a director, and this is really well directed and really stylish. Like it's almost like he's showing off at points, like how good he could do certain things. You know, so I liked the look of it. I liked the two leads. I'm a fan of Anya Taylor-Joy. I would agree. this one review, I think it was on the Slash Filmcast. I think it was Jeff Cannata said that the movie cheats. It definitely cheats. There's a big twist that they cheat on. Big time. You see the movie, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. That's a problem for me. It also takes a while to set up what the conflict is here. It spends an hour of just, you know, her following this girl around and her being intrigued by this girl from the past, and also just kind of her adjusting to college in the big city, and, you know, her initial roommates are these, you know, kind of mean girls. There's a guy that likes her. You know, it's setting up all this stuff. But the conflict that you know is coming, if you've seen the trailer, takes at least an hour to arrive.
Okay.
I wasn't bored, though, leading up to that. Again, I was kind of impressed by what he was, like, just the stylish touches that Wright was putting on it, the music. The two girls, you know, so I was having a good time. Again, I think the twist is a big cheat, and I think that the ending is just like okay. But overall, you know, I had a good time with it. It's a recommend. I'd say it's a rental, you know.
Okay.
Which is, again, that's, I remember liking Baby Driver, or convincing myself I liked Baby Driver. But I have not watched it since. I'll tell you that.
I think I liked it on the first. I don't think I liked it as much as you did, but I think I liked it as much. I think I liked it on the first watch, but I tried to watch it again, and like, it's a lot of just style with nothing else there, really.
Yeah.
Which I think that's a problem I have with a lot of Edgar Wright's movies, are just like, he's very stylish. He is very great with a camera. Sometimes the stuff surrounding it isn't necessarily fulfilling.
And people will say that about this one, but this is the first one I've seen where I thought there was something here. You know, it's saying, it's one of the themes that is one that I really like when it's in movies. It was in the Sopranos movie this year, which is, you know, the way people talk about the past is very much filled with nostalgia. And this movie's like, well, the past wasn't as good as you think it was, you know. Sopranos movie did that very well. This is a big theme in this movie. The other theme in this is kind of a Me Too theme about how women are treated. That's probably the bigger theme, honestly, out of the two. And I think he did a pretty cool job with it. And in fact, like, despite my problems with the ending, I really dug the final second, kind of. I was like having issues. I'm like, you get a pass. Good job, buddy. And when that final shot hit, my girlfriend turned to me and she said, I loved it. And she does not get that. I do not get that reaction from pretty much any movie I watch with her. So she liked it. I dug it. It's a good rental. Do you need to spend $20 on it? No, but, you know, I'd say give it a rent when it's six.
Yeah. Sounds good.
Not a big movie, but it's a new movie, and it's big to me, is The Beta Test, which is the new film from Jim Cummings.
Yep.
You're familiar with him, right?
Through you, yes.
Yeah, yeah. He's the cop who gets blown away in the flashback at the beginning of Halloween Kills. He's also, you know, actor and he's a filmmaker. He's director, writer. Yeah. He did The Wolf of Snow Hollow last year, which I really enjoyed. A lot of people really enjoyed it. I know, Chris, you didn't like it as much.
No, but I mean, I understand why people like it. Just didn't necessarily click with me.
I find him to be... I think he's really interesting as a filmmaker because of... He's a completely independent voice. He's doing it on his own, and I very much respect that. It's something I like to highlight in some of the movies I pick for our show, is try to pick people who are kind of outside the system. That's definitely him. I also find him to be a very fascinating actor. Like, he is the king of meltdowns, in my opinion. Very good at, like, starting a sentence calm and losing his shit by the end of it. Anyways, all that said, I'm a fan of him. His new movie is out, available for rent. I think it's $6. Premise of this one, completely different. I don't think you would... Actually, I would call this maybe horror, because there's some shocking violence in it. Way more than Wolf of Snow Hollow. But the premise of this...
Wolf of Snow Hollow almost plays like a comedy in some
ways. Yeah, yeah. This, I'd say, is kind of like a little bit of a thriller, but the violence has horror elements. The premise is, he stars in it again, and he's a Hollywood agent. He gets a letter in the mail inviting him to a no-strings-attached anonymous sexual encounter. Basically, like, you're invited to this hotel room at this time to have sex with a woman you don't know. And he goes for it, and he spends the rest of the movie trying to figure out who this woman was. Basically, he wants to do it again. Interesting premise that, I'm holding a few things back, but I was intrigued. It's kind of what they sell it as in the trailer, and that's actually what it is, but, there's a little more to it. There's a lot more to it. There's some, I think, really cool twists. Like I said, some pretty gnarly violence in it. So it's an interesting commentary on it. I think it's an interesting commentary on, like, the era we're in, on the internet. Kind of this, like, anonymous encounter he has, like, with, they use the mail in it, but it's kind of a stand-in for the internet. And it's set up through the internet. And also, it's a pretty harsh skewering of Hollywood, which he gets to do because he completely operates on his own. If you do rent it and you enjoy it, I highly recommend watching his behind-the-scenes video on YouTube.
Okay.
It's like a 25-minute making of where you're just like, holy shit, like, this guy... It was crowdfunded, and, the budget was like $300,000, I think, for the movie. I think he came in under budget. He's looking for any way, he's not looking to spend money. He's looking to see locations he can find without spending money. He's, like, editing the movie in his garage, doing sound effects, recording sound effects on the GarageBand app on his iPhone. Like, he's showing you doing this, and then he shows you the sound effect in the movie, and he's just like, see, you can make movies. Pretty inspiring stuff. But the movie itself, I think, is pretty exciting and pretty twisted and dark. I was surprised by where it went, and it's definitely one of my favorite movies of the year.
Nice.
And different from Wolf of Snow Hollow. So unless you don't like him as a performer, it's a different thing.
Okay.
Those are pretty much it for me. Other than TV, but I say we get into it, man, with our big Christmas movies.
Let's do it.
We're gonna go in chronological order. We're gonna start with Christmas Evil from 1980.
Thank you. told you he'd be happy that we remembered him.
This Christmas, Santa's going to make everyone happy. The grown-ups. And the kids. Christmas Evil. The non-believers.
Watch out!
And the screamers. And this Christmas, you better believe in Santa, or he'll slay you.
Merry Christmas, Frank.
Christmas Evil, the night he dropped in.
Great Christmas movie, right, Chris? Great Christmas movie.
Sure, we'll go with that.
Written and directed by Lewis Jackson. If you look at Wikipedia, it says it premiered November 7th, 1980 in Pittsburgh. The truth of the matter is the movie never really got a proper release. So there's no box office because it didn't really ever get released. Some of the story behind that is the ads for the film were deemed unfit by the MPAA. And because of that, the release was basically canceled. I can't remember who the distributor was on this, but they basically shit canned it, which is weird because it was about to come out. Lewis Jackson, you've probably never heard of him. That's because this movie came in at twice the budget it was supposed to. It was supposed to be a $400,000 budget. He ballooned it into $800,000. And that is mostly due to, I think the sound files got lost. The sound supervisor lost basically the soundtrack. And he insisted on hiring an actual good cinematographer, which the cinematographer alone raised the budget by $200,000. So you don't get a lot of work if you
go over the budget that much. Yeah.
Yeah. If you double the budget of the movie, I think he's right about the cinematographer. I think this is a pretty good looking movie. And this is a work of passion for him. Which is funny because I think it was an idea he got when he was stoned in college and he saw a dude dressed as Santa Claus, and that's where he got the idea for the movie. And he spent the next decade trying to get it made. In fact, all the Christmas decorations that you've seen in the movie, like the production design, stuff that he collected over the course of a decade, while just hoping and he would get a chance to make the movie. On Rotten Tomatoes, it sits at 75%. IMDb, a 5.6, so not bad.
That's pretty decent, yeah.
Despite getting not much of a release, it has gained a little bit of cult status over the years. Big champion of the movie is director John Waters. It's his favorite Christmas movie. He likens it, or he says it's a trans allegory, except for someone wanting to become the opposite gender. It's about someone becoming Santa Claus.
Sure.
If you get the Blu-ray, he loved the movie so much, he did a commentary track on the movie. I don't know if he did it with the director or if there's two separate checks. I have not listened to him. I own it, but I have not listened. But premise of the movie, a boy sees mommy with Santa Claus when he was a kid, and when he grows up, he's got major fucking issues, and kind of childlike in a way, kind of built his whole life around Christmas and wanting to be Santa Claus. Would you say that's kind of what it's about?
Yeah, like easy premise, yeah.
So get into the details. Before we get totally into it, just at the whatever reviews there were at the time were kind of negative, but as you see it over time, it has gained traction because it's at 75%. Horror critics dismissed it at the time for having a lack of gore, which I'll agree with. I really like this movie, but I agree with that. And besides John Waters, the other thing that kind of revived this is Vinegar Syndrome. The Blu-ray company released this in 2014. I've known about Vinegar Syndrome for a while. They're, you know, one of the companies that have you heard anything about like Vinegar Syndrome? Though I think they're
unlike licensed one of, like, there's older a whole, films yeah. and re-release them yeah. and try and get their stat on and
yeah,
not and Criterion it, level yeah. movies.
Yes. And Vinegar Syndrome, though, I just kind of learned about the. You know, I was aware of them. I own some of their Blu-rays, but they specifically, like, their mission statement is film preservation, M's or whatever. And so if no one re-releases them, eventually the film is going to degrade and they'll be lost forever. And their name, Vinegar Syndrome, is a reference to the degradation process that happens to 35mm film. So there you go. You learned something today. Again, I've been aware of this company for years and did not know that's what their name meant.
That's kind of cool. Like, it's something that certainly, like, regardless of how you feel about this film or films that they're preserving, like, it's something that has to happen. Like, there's so much good art out there that we're losing because, you know, they took the reel and it got thrown in a corner in a warehouse and you're never going to see it. And like, hey, like, this could be something that clicks with you.
You know, film preservation, game preservation, anything like any sort of art preservation, it's not about preserving the big hits and the classics. Those are going to be preserved. Those already are. You know, I think if you care about the medium, you want the trash to be preserved as well. So, and some of the stuff that they put out is trash, but I would argue some of the stuff they put out is really good. And both of the movies we're reviewing tonight were actually early releases for them. So. Christmas Evil, as we're about to get into it, kind of got revived by them in 2014. People started to take notice. Film opens in Christmas 1947, and it's this family. Our main character is a little boy in it. I already kind of alluded to this, but, basically, he's the older brother, right? Harry.
He's the older, brother. Yep.
Yeah. He gets told by his younger brother that Santa Claus is not real. He doesn't want to believe it. Very weird edit in this scene at the beginning where the whole family is standing on the stairs and then they just they cut and they disappear. I don't know why they did that, but anyways, Harry, our main character, comes down later and sees mommy with Santa Claus and Santa's on the ground, like, going up her skirt or her lingerie or whatever, like, basically Santa's about to eat his mom out, and so he realizes then that his brother was right, Santa Claus isn't real, it's their dad, and this apparently scars him for life. Yeah, despite this being something that everyone, I mean, most of us don't see, our dad
is Santa. Yeah, you don't normally come down and see mommy fucking Santa Claus, but, like,
but you do find out at some point it's all a lie, right?
Like, yeah.
Spoilers to anyone listening here who still believes. I'm sorry.
I did. Like, my first note was, what the fuck is this opening? Like, it's so weird. It's weirdly cut because they keep going back and, like, the Santa's face is, like, in her crotch. And it's, like, the same shot over and over again. And, like, nothing's happening. It's just him, like, sniffing her crotch. And then, like, the mom, like, you know, she's kind of being ogled by Santa, and the kid goes upstairs and cuts himself. Like, what the fuck is going on?
He's so disturbed. He, like, runs upstairs, smashes his snow globe, and cuts himself. And then we get, and, like, right away, like, right here, I was, like, intrigued by the movie. The first time I saw this was last Christmas, the Joe Bob special. I had never heard of it before. But right away, I remember the first time I was like, this is... You know, this might not be what I was expecting. You know, you hear Christmas Evil, you think it's going to be a slasher, and this is not really that.
No. And some of my opinion may circle on that as well, because I kind of thought this would be it. I thought it was a slasher, and it's something different.
Yeah, we don't have to hold our cards too close to our vest. Yeah, yeah. We have differing opinions on this movie, and I lay it on me. I'm happy to debate it or whatever, or have it out here. But I really like this movie. It's grown on me actually since I saw it last year. But what were you gonna say?
Let's keep going through the movie. Okay. I'm not gonna lie. Like I kind of got a little bit bored from like that point.
Okay.
For quite a while.
All right. And see, like I have an idea what people who don't like this movie. Like I have an idea in my head why they don't like it. We'll see if I'm right. But
okay.
You get your opening credits. It's interesting because although the film's called Christmas Evil, when they made it, you could tell it was supposed to be called You Better Watch Out, because that's the credit you get on the screen. As a general rule, I say that the title on the screen in the movie is what it should be called, but this movie has been called Christmas Evil for so long. It was also briefly in the 80s called Terror in Toyland. You could get it like on VHS called Terror in Toyland.
Like I get Christmas Evil. Terror in Toyland's a... That makes it seem like it's a completely different movie.
I don't think any of the titles are... I mean, Christmas Evil is just so simple, though.
It's easy to remember, I guess. Other generic, yep.
So after being traumatized as a kid, it's present day. He's all grown up. He's this middle-aged man played by Brandon Maggart, who I think is the reason I love this movie. This is his only big role. Like his only leading role. Other than that, people might know him as Fiona Apple's dad. But this is kind of it. Like this is, I actually caught him in a Brian De Palma movie I saw the other day. He shows up for 2 seconds as a John, a John. But here he's the lead, and I think he's really good in this. We're introduced to him as this man who is now obsessed with Christmas. Like he wears Christmas pajamas. I think a Christmas alarm clock, Christmas shit. His whole
apartment is Christmas.
And when we meet him, it's before Thanksgiving. So like this is how this guy's house is permanently decorated
year round. Yep. He dresses like a fucking elf, like red pajamas and.
And what you have here is not a slash. I mean, there's like maybe a scene or two that you could call a slasher, but I think those are the most disappointing parts of the movie. What you have here is this kind of like psycho thriller, like where it's about a man slowly going insane.
So let me lay this on you, see if you like the comparison, because it was something that kind of hit me as I was watching it.
Mm-hmm.
This is. Like instead of what's his name in the Joker, but that's what this film kind of correlated with me was like, it's a psychological like just degradation of somebody's psyche,
and it's falling apart.
Yeah, and like where Joaquin Phoenix turns into the Joker, this dude here turns into Santa Claus. Like,
silly. It's silly, but I think that. He sells it. I think that he sells it. I think the movie.
I think he's good.
I think what I said in my Letterboxd review is this movie constantly is punching above its weight. Like it's this super low budget thing, but man, has it got atmosphere to me. There's like a shot where he's working in his office, and all of a sudden the camera just zooms in on the Santa poster behind him, and you get this really ominous music. I don't know. There's always like these little touches like that. I don't know. Give it a lot of atmosphere, and I always like when you're first watching it, you're like constantly waiting for something fucked up to happen.
Yes.
And the movie just kind of very often, even after he goes crazy, like puts you like where you're uncomfortable, where you're like, oh no, what's he gonna do here? And sometimes nothing happens. Yeah, I'm thinking of like a party near the end. He goes to this party near the end, and it's like you're like, oh god, what's he gonna do? And everyone accepts him at this. Like he walks into a random Christmas party, and everyone loves him because he's just so good at playing Santa, and he has a good time. Like nothing bad happens, except he has this really scary warning that he gives the kids at the end, and everyone's looking like, what the fuck? What were you going to say, Chris?
There's like a good part early on. It's like, you know, after he gets his coffee or whatever, he goes up on the roof and he's like spying on the neighborhood kids.
Yes.
And he has like, he has books like where he has their names written down. And he's like, I think the kid's name is Moss or something like that.
Garcia, man.
Yeah. He like, he just like, oh, like he booking at smutty magazines or something like
that. He has impure thoughts.
Impure thoughts. Sees, yeah. Bad hygiene.
Yeah, because he sees, you know, he's looking through these binoculars, he looks in the kid's window, he sees the kid cutting out centerfolds, you know, and holding them up. Yeah, just all sorts of, like, weird, wacky, like, every little touch like that, I actually, like, really love in this. Like, it kind of, he has interactions with the kids, too. Like, I really love, again, another, it's a little thing, it's not really anything, but there's a part where he's walking home and the kids are on the other side of the street and they start talking to him and he could tell, like, just by the look on his face that he's, like, overjoyed that the kids like talking to him. And, you know, they ask him, you know, what did you wish or whatever? He's like, I wish I was super magic, which maybe he gets his wish in this. We'll see. He works in a toy factory.
Yeah.
I get the sense recently promoted because...
Yeah, they
give him shit, like, about it.
Yeah, right? he's like in with his old crew or whatever, and they're like, oh, have you heard, like, Harry got a promotion, and
you don't come to union meetings anymore is another line they give. Yeah. And so now he's the manager in the office, and everyone doesn't really, I don't think they liked him in the first place, but they don't take him seriously at all now. And he misses being on the line making the toys because a big thing for him is he really just wants to be Santa Claus and he wants Christmas to be like this quality, happy experience for kids. And part of that is not cheap junk toys. And you get these scenes where he's, you know, I think some really cool mirror scenes, which again will remind you of Joker. Like there's one where early on where he with shaving cream all over, and you could just tell he's like really overjoyed that he looks like he's got a beard. There's a part where he agrees to cover one of the workers' shifts, so he gets to go work on the line. But I think the worker said he had to go be with his family or something.
Yeah, he's like trying to get somebody to fill in, and he basically gets bullied into doing it.
Yeah, and then on his way home, Harry looks through the window of a bar and he sees the guy drinking in the bar. And actually, right as he looks through, like perfect timing, the guy's telling his buddies about how he got this sucker to fill in for him. And he goes home and has a meltdown. He's like angrily humming, what is it, Santa Claus is coming to town.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of where he cracks. Like
that's when you like really. I mean, you're like right off the bat, you're like this guy's fucked up. But that's when you're like, yeah, he's starting to go over the edge. He goes by his brothers, and for some reason, watches his brother through the window. Right? Isn't that his brother? He's watching through the window with his wife. I don't
just
know.
Just weird because his wife and his nephews love him like.
Yeah.
They love having him around, and like his brother doesn't really like him. He thinks he's a fuck up, but he watches like he's fucking Scrooge or something in the Christmas Carol.
His brother too is an actor now that people would know. I can't think of the guy's name, but he's
Jeffrey DeMunn.
Yeah, Jeffrey DeMunn. Frank Darabont uses him a lot.
Yep.
He was in Shawshank. He was on, I think, The Walking Dead. Anyone seen a lot of movies will recognize his brother. I think this might be one of his brother's first roles. But yeah, kind of after this, that stuff happens with his coworker and he sees his brother. I don't know what bothers him about his brother, but he starts to lose it. He skips going to Thanksgiving, you know, and that, like, concerns his brother because he always goes to Thanksgiving. He's all into this holiday shit. And he's like, oh, I gotta stay home. And he's got this, like, montage of him making a Santa costume. He has a fucking creeper van that he paints as, to be like a sleigh.
Yep.
And, you know, in the montage, you get, like, shops setting up their Christmas decorations and stuff. Nice little montage. You get him hiding in bushes of other people's houses. There's, like, one... Was that Moscow?
It was Moss, yeah. He's hanging out there. The kid is such an asshole.
But, yeah, he's, like, in the bushes, like, right there. Tries to grab him. He does a weird thing where he, like, covers... Like, puts mud on his face and leaves his mark on the house. Like, what the fuck is that? It's like he's marking it as one of the bad houses or whatever.
So he knows where to drop off his dirt later.
Yes. Like, sack of dirt. You get him going to his office Christmas party and just talking insane shit. A really funny line to me is one of his coworkers is like, "I'll tell you, Harry, I don't know what the fuck you're talking about." And it's like he keeps saying,
"Something about tune."
I figured out my tune. I figured out my tune, which is, I think, really cool. There's some cool dialogue with that later where he like calls his brother and he's like, "I figured out my tune. I know what I'm going to do." And then I think when he talks to him even later, he's like, "I don't understand. People say that they want, you know, Santa Claus, but they don't, you know?"
Right.
But he gets mad at this Christmas party because the company has a video running about how they're going to be donating toys to like a children's hospital.
Yep.
But then one of the bosses is like, "Yeah, you know, we don't know how, you know, how much we have to donate. We're kind of counting on the workers to pitch in for this," which is, of course, like what a lot of companies do.
A lot of companies like, we're doing a drive. Like, you have millions of dollars, but you want us to go buy toys to you can donate them in our name, but not our name, like the company name.
And if you ask the director, Louis Jackson, he says that's kind of what this movie is about. I'm like, I don't know. That's kind of a small part of like the big thing, but okay.
Yeah, I mean, it's just another thing that compounds Harry's issues. Yeah.
But that's kind of, I think, what sets him completely over the edge, because then he goes out and he steals the toys from, he steals the toys from the factory.
Yeah.
And, you know, fills, you know, bags with them. He fills other bags with dirt for the bad kids. You get another unhinged mirror moment. I think he's glued the beard to his face at this point.
Yeah, he glues it to his face, so it's stuck there.
Because he's, like, pulling at it, and it's not moving. Do they show him gluing it? Because I just got the impression of the way he's acting in the mirror. I don't know.
Yeah, I guess that's kind of it. Like, they kind of show him, like, adhering something to it so that it'll stick.
I think, you know, another great example of why I love this movie is that scene, though, because he's pulling on the beard, and he's like, "It's me! It's me!" And, like, I can't do it as good as him. I think that Maggart does a really great performance in this.
He starts, I like when he pulls up to the hospital.
Yeah, that's what he does right after. Yeah.
And, like, the security guard, like, won't let him in at first. But he, like, finally convinces him to go inside and get somebody. And, like, then he's out there practicing his laugh. And it just starts getting, like, heartier and heartier to, like, you believe that he is Santa Claus.
And he does have a good Santa laugh.
Yeah, it's like really solid.
So he like convinces them to. They don't let him in, but the staff comes out and grabs all the presents. Everyone's happy with him. Most of like his night out on Christmas Eve as Santa is kind of like, I don't know, kind of, if he didn't go completely nuts, he could have pulled it off.
Yeah, because he's just like delivering toys. Like, I mean.
But then he goes to like a Christmas mass.
A Christmas mass.
He's standing outside the church. I don't know why, what he's doing. But they come out, and I think it's some company guys. I don't know if it's coworkers, but
I think it's the younger guy that they like, who was the guy who thought up the idea for donating the toys. Yeah. He's the one that gets introduced at the party. I think that's.
He already doesn't like the guy, and they come out and they're just mocking him for being dressed up as as Santa, and he grabs one of the toy soldiers out of his bag, stabs the dude in the eye with it, with probably your one real gore shot here, where you see, like,
yeah,
the
there's toy soldier. Some splurty blood, and
you see this, you know, that go into the eye, and then he pulls out a hatchet out of his ass and starts, you know, hacking up
kind
of
ridiculous.
Some other people.
Yeah, he hacks up the other dude's friend in the head.
You know, this is probably the one slasher part you really get, and it's pretty weak.
There's another part in a little bit, but yeah. This is like it's public. It's kind of a stabby stabby bit.
And then he runs away. He just like runs.
Yeah.
I don't have a lot of big criticisms of this movie. I liked it the first time I saw it. And then I watched it twice for this episode because I was like, this thing is great. Like, it's close to great, you know? But this part, and, you know, and I get it, it's not a slasher, but if you're going to do one, it is a horror movie. And when you get to the violence in a horror movie, they're trying to do a slasher element here. It looks bad, I think. Like, it doesn't...
It's not great looking compared to other stuff of the era. Like,
it's no Tom Savini, you know? No,
it's framed weird. Yeah, the close-up in on the eye is strange. Like, it doesn't look great.
And it's over real quick. And he's off continuing to do his rounds. That's when he goes to the random Christmas party I mentioned. He goes to his one coworker's house. The guy that, like, you know. Oh,
Frank. Yep, the guy who tricked him.
Yeah.
Before that, like, my note here is the motherfucker trying to fit down a chimney.
Yes, this is it. Like, he's trying to fit down the chimney and he gets stuck, and it's kind of like a comical moment. That's how I take it, and just kind of cracks me up that he can't do it. But one of the times I watched it for this rewatch, I watched the Joe Bob version, and he said he loves the scene of him not being able to fit down the chimney, not for comical reasons, because it goes to show that, like, no matter how hard the guy tries, he can never live out his fantasy the way it is supposed to be in his head. Like, you can't really go down a chimney. And I was like, yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, he's not magic. He's still just a dude playing Santa Claus. Right. We'll get there, but like. I get Joe Bob's point is, like, you know, here it's like he wants to be Santa. He wants to be able to, like, squeeze down the chimney and, like, just magic, right? He, like, pops out fat belly, and it doesn't work that way. Like, you can't stuff yourself down a North Jersey rooftop.
And, you know, it is a good point by Joe Bob for sure. And it actually fits in with Joe Bob's interpretation of the ending, which is not my interpretation, but we'll get there. The ending, I think the ending is another thing that might send people one way or the other on this. And to me, the ending made me love it a million times more. We're getting there. We're close. But he goes in and kills Frank. Really long, drawn-out scene through the house.
So he, like, drops presents for the kids. Like, that's really nice. It's sweet. But then he's standing over Frank, and he starts to kill him. And this is long. Like, this is a long scene. And so, like, my note here is Frank's wife totally knows that her husband is being killed and just pretends to continue sleeping until he gets his throat cut
and
lands on her boob.
And I think it's another weak, you know, the violence is weak in this. That's my big criticism. I think that's what holds it back from being great. Because he's like, starts by trying to suffocate him, right?
He's with a pillow. He's just like, hey, Frank. And then, like, slow. No, not even a pillow. I think it's his bag. It's his Christmas bag.
It looks stupid, him trying to do this. And then he just says, fuck it. And he slits his throat with the Christmas tree star, I think.
Yeah.
He goes back to the factory in the morning, breaks all the toys that he considers subpar.
By this point, he's kind of being chased around too by people with pitchforks and torches. Yeah,
and it's on the news. If you see anyone dressed as Santa, like, avoid them. It's pretty funny.
There's an amusing scene where they have rounded up a bunch of Santas.
There's a lineup. Like,
ho ho.
That's definitely some comedic relief in this. Like, this movie, I think, is kind of dark and grim, but, like, that, you know, that Santa police lineup scene is meant to be funny. He does the insane call of his brother, which I already mentioned. There's a weird, like, he runs into, like, some kids. They see him dressed as Santa. They're all, like, run to him. Oh, Santa, Santa. And their parents come around the corner, and they're like, oh, shit. And that's when the mob forms and starts chasing him.
Yeah.
But, you know, homage to Frankenstein at this point. It's, like, ridiculous. Like, these people
are running around North Jersey with fucking torches. Yes,
in modern times, just running around. It's like a torch-bearing mob. He goes to his brother's house, and his brother's like, I knew it was you. And brother just, like, chokes up. Like, they get an argument about, you know, why he's all fucked up. And his brother just fucking snaps. Like, the normal brother snaps. Chokes him out, and you think, oh, he killed him, he's dead. But maybe he's super magic. Puts him in a van. He moves him back outside into his van, right? Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, like, I don't understand why that happened. Why, like,
I guess he was just gonna try to pretend like his brother pulled up and died in the driveway. I don't know. Like, okay. I don't understand. I
just call the cops and be like, yo, he attacked me, so I strangled him.
Yeah, yeah, right. But very hilariously, he like wakes up and punches his brother. Just like the shot of his fist coming out of the window is like, it made me laugh. It made Melissa laugh. And then we're at the end. Like, the mob is basically finds his van and starts chasing him down again. He drives off a bridge. And then instead of, like, the van falling down into a ravine or whatever, and, you know, he's dead, the van takes flight. Like, goes a real flight. To the moon. Yeah, it goes. That's the ending. Like, it's
with I'm reading, I think, like, the night before Christmas as it's flying.
Yeah. And it's definitely, like, anyone who has seen this movie, it's like, this is like a big thing that people like to talk about. So I don't know. What did you think of the ending? I guess you don't like the movie, so you don't like the ending either.
It's goofy. Like, it definitely feels a little out of place, I think, for me, but I didn't hate the ending. Like, whatever. It was, all right, like, we're just gonna go, now he's Santa Claus, I guess, with his creeper van.
I like it. Here's my reasoning, and, you know, there's two interpretations of what happened at the end. But either interpretation you take, the reason I like it is because it's a surprise. Like, not the ending I was expecting leading up, because this is, like, as silly as it is that it's about a guy that wants to become Santa, it's a pretty dark and kind of sad movie about this guy falling apart.
Yeah.
And then the ending is he drives off a bridge and he's flies away. And so you could take it as he was super magic. He was Santa. He, like, achieved his dream. Or probably and that's the one I like. I just like it. You know, I don't know if it makes sense or not. The other interpretation is Joe Bob's, which makes more sense, which is it's in his head. Yeah, like, he falls and he dies, but it was totally in his head. You know, it's his vision right before he dies.
It's like, I am magic and I am flying away, but, like, in the realism of what the rest of the film is, it probably makes sense that
makes more sense. Yeah.
He's dying. Maybe he never even made it out to his van. Like, he could still be in his brother's living room.
Maybe.
It's just like his dying thoughts.
This is like his fever dream. Like, this is like when all the chemicals explode in your brain as you die. This is what he's envisioning.
Yeah.
Either the thing is, for me personally, either way, if you say, you know, it's all in his head, cool. If you say he was actually Santa, I think that's cool, too. I like that you could interpret it either way, and I like both interpretations. I kind of prefer that it was magic or something at the end. Like, it's just, I don't know. I like it to be literal. But that's it. That's the ending of the movie. Weird movie, for sure. Let's hear your thoughts on this, Chris.
Yeah, very, very weird. For the most part, and yeah, like I said earlier, when we're talking, like, you know, there's that opening, and then it's just kind of like, for me, it was just a bit dull. For, you know, there's bits in there that certainly that, like, stuck with me, you know, with the book that he's keeping track of the kids, and the part with his coworkers, but like it was just kind of like dull, and I kept waiting for something to happen, and it really like nothing like really kind of does again until, you know, he stabs the dude in the eye on the church steps, and it's like
that's about an hour in. That's about an hour into the movie, and a movie that's barely an hour and a half.
Yeah,
like, if you're waiting for the slasher shit to kick in, never really does, but. At the bare minimum, an hour in.
I do think talking about it with you, like, you know, there, I kind of agree it punches above its weight class. Like I said, like, it kind of feels a bit like the Joker. I mean, way before the Joker, obviously.
Made by some nobody with no budget. Joker had a budget, you know what I mean? Like,
right, yeah. And, like, I think this does a lot of those same themes, like, actually pretty decently. I didn't like the Joker either, but...
Yeah, yeah.
I
like this way more than the Joker. It's so odd, you know, like
it's very weird. Yeah. Like, and I do kind of like the premise of it, that it's like, you know, this dude just wants to be like, he just wants to make people happy.
Yeah.
And like he has, you know, he obviously has some like mental, you know, issues, but, and he's not getting help for them, but like, and it ultimately makes him snap and hurt people, but it's not his intention, like, and he was pushed in that way. So it does have some like really cool themes. It's just for me, like, I just found most of it a little bit dull. I do think talking about it here, though, like, I think I like it a little bit more after discussing. I think when you watch it by yourself, you're just like, all right, well,
you probably didn't know what you're getting into too much,
right? Like, especially coming off of, you know, the next movie, like,
yeah.
I watched that one first, like, all right, like, no, I'm getting it. No, what the hell is this thing? This is fucking weird. It's this kind of mental disorder, psychological thing going on,
like a character. So it's like Maniac, but without the fucking intense gore of that movie. Also, Maniac is way more unpleasant than this. This, like.
This is mostly, that's the thing, it's mostly pleasant. Like, it's not, there is unpleasantness, obviously. He murders three people. Like, he has a standoff, and, like, half of New Jersey is chasing him with torches at the end of the film. But
it's but not, like, it's nowhere near as dark as something like Maniac.
Yeah, and I think the core of it really is he just wants to be, he just wants to make people happy. And
that's what fucked it up. You know, to me, the big thing that makes it work is his performance, but that's what Joe Bob says makes it work, is because he's pure. He's childlike, and in a lot of ways, he's more innocent than all the other adults around him, and they're the ones that are kind of fucked up, but he doesn't respond well to this dynamic, and, you know, it leads to him killing people.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's the quality that Joe Bob says makes it work. I kind of agree, but I think... Above even that, I think Brandon Maggart is really good in this movie. I couldn't believe he didn't do more.
I think he gives a pretty strong performance here.
I'll let you have the final, your final word, and then I'll do mine. So, final thoughts, rating.
I would certainly say, like, if you're going to watch it, don't go in thinking, like, don't go in based on like the cover, like the Shudder imagery, like, that they have is, like, definitely pointing you to a different movie than what this is. It's not a slasher. It's not, like, some weird, like, Santa Claus killer movie. It's a more cerebral thing that is a little bit slower than maybe what you're anticipating. But, yeah, I'm going to go 5 out of 10.
I kind of already said my thoughts on it. It's kind of this low-budget movie that it has more style. You know, it looks good, which unfortunately costs this guy his career. I think the performance by Maggart is great. I love the cinematography, the look of it. It has that warm, cozy feeling that get kind of like from Black Christmas, the same sort of deal. I love the weird ending. There was I looked at the Letterboxd reviews and someone said, I like this more than Taxi Driver, and I'm only half kidding. And it's kind of a Taxi Driver story. Same idea as Taxi Driver. I love it. It's the weird Christmas version of something like that, about a guy that wants to become Santa. Everyone around him is kind of rotten, and it drives him to do crazy shit. Again, a movie I like the first time. I'm really happy to be an owner of it on Blu-ray now. I'm going to give it a 7.5 out of 10. Really nice. Like it. Our second film tonight, and you can either blame me or thank me for this one as well, Jack Frost, from 1997.
One cold night, science and evil collide. Oh, yeah. A serial killer is on the loose.
We hadn't even tested the acid on an amoeba, let alone a human cell. This is a disaster.
Look, I just saw something that doesn't belong in this world, and it's out there killing my friends. Now tell me what it is.
Jack Frost.
I think Jack's about to make an entrance.
And he's giving cold-blooded a whole new meaning.
What?
You left the 7-10 split.
Hell has just frozen over. Blow me. Jack Frost.
Look, Ma! I'm a Picasso!
Written and directed by Michael Cooney.
Not to be confused with Jack Frost from 1998.
Yeah.
With Michael Keaton.
Anytime you mention this movie, you'll get someone that says, I thought you were talking about the Michael Keaton movie, which is weird because I'm like, was that movie like a big hit or something? Like, how does everyone know that one?
No idea. I didn't know either one.
I used to see them both on the store shelves, and I was confused by that, you know, back in the day. But this one was made for the straight-to-video market, so there's no box office or budget. It's pretty low budget. this one sits at 7% on Rotten Tomatoes and 4.6 on IMDb. But we're going to explain why this is a Christmas classic. Let's just, you know, I'll say it right off the bat. I think I said this to you when I was telling you about this movie last year. This is the movie that you expect when you see the box on the shelf at Blockbuster back in the day. Like, you see this, and it's like the movie that you hope it'll be. You hope it'll be cheesy, it'll be violent, it'll be just totally silly, and like a movie that you and your friends can laugh at, and I think that this movie totally is. It's about a killer snowman.
I think the imagery for like the poster that IMDb is using is worse than anything that's in the movie.
It makes it look like super like intense, but yeah.
But it like looks like it is the cover of a bad movie.
Yeah.
But it's also like, as you said, it's good. This should be fun.
Yeah, this is like of the era. I'd say this is like the real heyday of the straight-to-video market was the 90s, even more so than the 80s. And now there is no like video. I mean, I guess you could say like all the shit they dump on the Netflix and stuff is kind of that, the equivalent of that now. But in the back of the day, these would sit on the shelf next to the big movies. And, you know, you walk in and you oftentimes pick the movie by the box. And it was, you know, in the vein of that straight-to-video market that was really fun in the 90s. Like, stuff like The Dentist and The Ice Cream Man. And just, like, you'd be like, oh, this is going to be stupid. We got to rent this. And that's what this is. I think the movie is, I think, very fun. I think that 7% is bullshit, dude, on Rotten Tomatoes. Like, come on. Only less than 1 in 10 people said this is worth watching. It's bad.
Yeah, it is bad, but I think it's one of those things, like, you have to know, like, you have to realize what you're watching, and be, like, this is not any sort of, like, highbrow horror film. It's a movie about a CGI snowman that's like killing people.
I don't know. I think it's just a
dude in a suit, right?
Yeah, whatever. You know, it's a movie. Yeah, it's a movie about a killer snowman. The movie knows it's stupid. Like, it knows it's stupid. It's constantly doing one-liners. In the beginning, there's this weird intro where this guy is telling a kid a bedtime story. I think it's all kind of in just voiceover. But it kind of sets up the story of who Jack Frost is. And I don't even remember what the story is. It's just he's a bad killer dude. and then we get into the movie proper, and it's like, I think they're transferring him somewhere to get executed. Like, he's, like, you know, imprisoned. He's in the back of this truck. They're driving through a winter storm. And I don't know why they have to transfer him to get murdered. I don't know if that's a thing that happens. It's hilarious because the side of the fucking truck that they're in says state executional transfer vehicle. And yeah, it's like right in the middle of a snowstorm. They pass into Snowminton, the name of the town. He kills a guard in the back. And while this is happening, their truck gets like in a head-on collision in the storm with a genetic research truck. He lives, but then that research truck explodes and shoots all this acidic chemical all over him and melts him into the snow. We get a very brief animation here of his cells like melding with the snow, and now he's elemental. He's fucking snow. He could turn into water. He could freeze and unfreeze himself. Completely ridiculous. I love how much the movie tries to explain through science, like what he is and stuff. They like really go into the explanation in this. Then we meet our main character, so to speak, which is the sheriff of this small town. And you get a little back, like, flashback of the sheriff actually was the one who discovered this guy. Like, it was like a routine stop, and he's trying to talk to the guy, and he ended up arresting him. We get the screen debut of Shannon and Elizabeth in this, which, if you're...
Excellent.
Yeah, if you're way younger than us, you might be like, who the hell is Shannon Elizabeth? In our day, Shannon Elizabeth was very hot star of American Pie. This is like a year or two before that. She is smoking hot in this, I think. And she has probably the best death, which we'll get to. Fuck it. Trying to explain, there's actually like a lot of things that happen in the plot, so to speak, but it's very simple. Like, he just starts killing people, and then there's like these feds. I don't know, they say they're from the federal government. People keep asking them, are they the FBI? And like, yeah. I guess there's some secret task force that's in charge of fucking wrangling this fucking snow monster.
It's kind of hysterical too, because they always show like what they show them in like smoky rooms and like,
yeah, it's like these are X-Files guys. Yeah. But yeah, I'll start on some of the big points. this kid gets killed by the snowman. Well, I don't know. There's a weird sledding accident. I guess it's suggested that the snowman, Jack Frost, did it. It's just the dad's like reaction. Everyone's like reaction. This kid's head got cut off, and
yeah,
the mom is like, just the night later that night, she's like, "Don't you think we should put the tree lights on?" And the dad's like, "Your son isn't dead in 5 hours. You want festivities?" Like, he's just snapping.
So like my first three notes are all about like this family here, because it's like, I think the movie actually starts a little bit slow. Mm-hmm. Up until about, like, you know, it was about 25 minutes in, and that's where the son, who's like this bully, gets his head lopped off by a whole sled.
Yeah.
And then like the whole scene, like with like where the kid, like they're dragging the kid's body away, it's like the cops just like they take like a shovel full of snow and like toss it over the blood. And then they just take the head away in like this clear garbage bag. right past the parents. Like, the dad is just overreacting, like, to everything. He just, like, it, and I mean, look, like, it's probably a good performance. It's just, he is so hysterical about everything. And then he flips out. But he flips out on the ma.
Like, I think he's trying to talk to him at one point. He's like, if I want free philosophy, I'll turn on Oprah. Like, he's just snapping on her. By the way, you mentioned the snow. Did you notice the fake snow in this and Christmas Evil? Like, how bad?
Yeah, it's not great.
Like, first, so Jack Frost, they actually shot it somewhere cold in the middle of January, but it was unseasonably warm the whole time that they were shooting. So they just had this fake matte snow everywhere. And then Christmas Evil, near the end, I don't know if you saw it. There's a part where his brother gets knocked into the snow right before the van goes off. And then his brother, like, kicks up the mat. Like, you can just see it's not snow. It's just a giant mat. And it, like, flips over. If you look, it's very much like how in, like, Halloween, they had, like, three bags of leaves to make it look like... Like it was fall in the Midwest. Here, they have three bags or whatever, fake snow. John Carpenter passed it off better than here.
It's easier to do.
Yeah, for sure.
It's easier to do fall than completely like winter with snowmen.
But yeah, if you ever watch this again, just look at like this, like how little snow there actually is. And they actually shoot a lot of scenes with the camera low down looking up at the characters because they didn't want to show that there's no snow anywhere.
Lots of weird angles in this movie.
I mean, it's a total cheese fest. The dad goes outside to smoke his pipe, and Jack Frost is there and grabs his axe, and instead of, like, murdering him, well, like, chopping him up with the axe, he just shoves the axe down his throat. You get one of his one-liners here. He's like, I only axed you for a smoke. Also, the voice that this guy is doing kind of reminds me, like, he's trying to do Brad Dourif as Chucky. Like, he definitely slipped into, like, a bad imitation of that at points, I think. Then Jack Frost goes in and kills the wife hilariously with, like, Christmas lights and ornaments. He, like,
amazing. Her. And then just, like,
wraps her up with Christmas lights that she's dead.
Yep. Like, wraps her up with the Christmas lights. There's, like, some weird, crazy camera work where it, like, zooms in and out on the face. Zooming in on the
face of Jack Frost? Yeah. Like, do-do-do-do, like, it's like a fucking TV, I don't know, like a TV show.
What's going on here? It's great.
It's just, the stuff you get in the middle here, actually, the middle to the end, it's just a bunch of crazy, stupid bullshit. He there's a part he stops a cop, like he's standing in the middle of the road with a stop sign, you know, so the cop's driving down the road and sees a snowman in the road. He's like, what the fuck? The cop gets out to look at it, and then I think he goes to his trunk to grab a shovel, and then when he, like, goes back, he's like, where the fuck did the snowman go? And the snowman has melted and reforms in the driver's seat, and he just drives away. You get this hilarious shot. It's just, one, just the image of this fucking fake snowman, like this whatever, I don't know what it is, like a puppet or what the fuck. Like that, like a snowman driving the car. It's just ridiculous, dude. Yeah.
It looks like a styrofoam, like, snowman, too.
One of the best. Yeah, I think it is. I think that's what it is. I think maybe at some points it's someone in a costume, but I think a lot of times it's just like a dummy that's, like, sitting there. And, you know, they make it work. Then we get the best scene in the movie, in my opinion, and this is the one where if you, like, look up the reviews on Rotten Tomatoes, the critics are like, tisk, 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 this is in poor taste. And I'm like, okay, dude. Like,
oh, no, it's not.
It's ridiculous. It's not, I mean, anyways, but, like, you know, you'll see reviews, a very uncomfortable rape scene, and you're like, okay, dude.
Before that, there's, like, this 90-second undressing scene where, like, Shannon Elizabeth's, like, basically stripping and, like, taking her, like, her boyfriend's clothes off, and then she, like, kind of, like, sets down, like, no. Like, you'll do X, Y, and Z for me, and sets him on task to, like, do something, and then she dries her hair for, like, 10 minutes. While her boyfriend's being killed.
And it didn't, and then, you know, like, Some guy's like shooting icicles at a boyfriend downstairs. She's upstairs blow drying her hair, and it did not occur to me until this time how weird it is, because she like is blowing drying her hair for 10 minutes, and then she gets in the bath. I'm like, why did you blow dry your hair? Like, your hair's gonna, you got your hair all dry.
It's wet again.
And then she just gets in the bath, and it's all wet. I'm like, okay. Yeah, when
this scene is amazing.
This whole part, like. He shoots the icicles in the boyfriend downstairs. He says, the boyfriend, as he's killing him, I'm the world's most pissed off snow cone. Like, what? It's just a stupid line. But yeah, this part, this scene with her in the bath and him coming in and killing her is, you know, I saw this 2 years ago on Joe Bob. And this is the scene where I'm like, I can't believe I've never seen this movie, but I'm buying this and watching it every year because of this. Because it's just like, that's when you, like, this movie is, you know, this movie is, like, completely silly. Like, if you take this rape scene, or, it's not even, whatever. If you take this scene seriously, you're not a fun.
Yeah, I mean, if you're reading into it, like, okay, technically, I guess it is a rape scene, but it is so outlandish.
It's like, silly, like.
He forms around her, like, basically encasing her. And then just like rams her up against the wall over and over again till she dies.
You don't think it's a rape? I mean, he's just like ram her against the wall, killing her.
I mean, it looks like a wall fuck scene. Like,
but then you're like,
just with the snowman.
You finally notice, like, oh wait, where's this carrot? And then he, like, after she's dead, he goes, looks like Christmas came a little early this year. And then you see him put his nose back on, and I'm like, oh my god, dude. Like, what the fuck? Like, this, alright, you went there, okay.
But that scene is something else.
Yeah, that's the one that, like, everyone was watching that night for the first time on Joe Bob. That's the scene that everyone was like, okay, this movie's fucking, I can't believe I've never seen this. And then you get a really long, like, extended climax where it's like the town, you know, like the sheriff, the feds, and a couple people versus Jack Frost. You know, he like kind of comes at them in the police station. The sheriff tries blow drying him. They actually like do that again where it's like they come up with their final, well, almost final solution. That's the thing. It's like it feels like there's like several endings and they were trying to somehow pad this out to make it 90 minutes.
Yeah, and like each ending like gets, it escalates more and more.
Yeah, so like I think the first thing they do is they all have hair dryers on like extension cords out of nowhere, and they're like, you know, we're gonna corner him, and they like, I think that's when they put him in the furnace, right?
Yeah,
they're like, you know, we're not gonna lure him, we're gonna corner, you know, we're gonna force him, and they like, you know, hit him with the blow dryer, he's like, nah, nah, and they get him in the furnace, they blow up the, I think the police station.
The whole police station, yeah.
He immediately puts himself all back together again, and
funny though, it's like, he's in pieces, like.
Yeah, he like, puts himself back together all fucked up, and he says, yeah. I'm a Picasso. Like, like, I don't know, man. You're either going to get on board with, like, that's what this movie is. It's him saying stupid shit. Like, it's a foam snowman saying stupid shit to people and trying to kill them. Like, you're either on that wavelength or you're not. I don't know. I find it to be very fun. Somewhere in this whole mix near the end, you get this long explanation from the scientists about why. Like, he's like, he created the acid so humans could survive the nuclear holocaust. Like, it's like way more thought out than it had to be. And then he's like, we can't kill Jack Frost now. Because don't you understand? He proves that, like, we have a soul. Like, his soul has been transferred into the snow. Like, okay, movie. Where were we? He does kill the scientist then in a very weird way right after that. Like, you don't see what happens, but then the scientist comes out front and he, like, pukes the snow out and then dies.
Oh, yeah.
And then Jack Frost reforms and goes, don't eat the yellow snow. Like, I don't even know. A lot of the one-liners. There's a lot of one-liners that, like, don't really make sense. And then, this is a funny bit, I think. Like, the Jack Frost gets in the car with the sheriff and his kid. And there's, like, this bit with the kid making him, I think, oatmeal cookies, right? I think that's what they're supposed to be. Or if it's just a pile of oatmeal.
Well, I think it was oats to feed the, like, goats or sheep or something.
And I thought it was bad cookies he made his dad.
And he didn't want them to be cold.
So Jack Frost gets in the car with them. They, like, you know, break the window to get out, and for whatever reason, as the dad's getting out, he shoves this fucking bag of oats in the fucking in the snowman's face, and it, like, permanently fucks up you know, a corner of his head. And that's when he says to the kid, like, "What the hell did you put in that?" He's like, "I didn't want them to get cold, so I put antifreeze." Just like this kid was gonna poison a whole bunch of fucking animals, I guess. But then I'm like, "Oh, that's kind of brilliant." Like they're kind of logically going through the things that you would think of if you're trying to kill a snowman, you know? And it's like, "Oh yeah, antifreeze, genius." and then I don't know if they're like in the general store or something at the end. Like, I don't know. He's upstairs somewhere fighting with the sheriff. The snowman is, and the other townsfolk's like back up a fucking pickup truck right outside the window. Yeah, and it's like
they filled the bed with antifreeze.
Yeah, they like lined the bed of the fucking pickup truck and just completely filled it with antifreeze. And it's like, you know, the horn blows, whatever, and the sheriff's like, "That's the cavalry, asshole!" And he fucking shoves the snowman out the window. They bottle up, like, you know, and then it melts him and everything. They've actually figured out how to kill him here. They bottle the antifreeze up and they bury it. And I thought there's like a little like line too, like, "What are we gonna tell anyone that comes here asking about like what happens?" And I don't know what the sheriff says. He says something like, "Tell him fuck it." Whatever, like, and then just bury these bottles of antifreeze, and then the very end, like, the last shot is you see, like, the liquid in the bottle start to bubble. You're like, "Oh, he's coming back." I don't know if you stuck around for the credits. There's a bunch of stupid shit in the credits, too. Not scenes, but, like, little quotes and stuff. Like,
I don't think I caught them, no.
No, like, one of them was... I think it was quotes, like, you know, you'd get some casts, you know, listing as it scrolls up, and then there would be, like, a quote. And I think the quotes were just, like, things that they would say, to, like, inside jokes that the crew would say to each other on set. Like, one of them was, "Where was the carrot in that shower scene?" You know, like, just, if you ever watch it again, take a look at the credits. There's, you know, it's like, oh, one thing it says in the credits is, like, opening, you know, title credits, like, the title credit, like the opening credits of the movie, are like going around to ornaments on a Christmas tree, and it says, you know, directed by so and so, whatever, right? And it says opening title credits by the director, and then like next to his name is just the fucking Visa and MasterCard symbols, like saying like he spent, you know, he just did, you know, put that shit on his credit card. I don't know. There's little jokes even in the end there. That's it though. That's fucking Jack Frost. I mean. We kind of covered the big things that happen in it. It's just a silly movie with a fucking snowman killing people in a town called Snowminton. What are your thoughts, Chris?
I mean, we said it at the beginning. This is a bad movie, but it's like one of those bad movies that just kind of works. Like, it's fun. It's just straight goofy fun. It's entertaining throughout. It does everything the right way. Like, it's so stupid, but it just clicks. And I really, really enjoyed it. Like, it was like, it started out, I was like, I don't know, like, this is a bit dull. And then, like,
why is Jeff and Javi so, like, about this movie?
Yeah, and then, like, the kid's fucking head gets chopped off, and it don't slow down from there. Like, it just keeps getting crazier and crazier. Some of it don't work. Some of the one-liners make zero sense. Like, you know, like you said, with the, oh, don't eat the yellow snow. Like, there should have been, like, we maybe should have seen something else.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I guess he's saying don't eat, you know, because he had, I don't know.
I don't know. I'm just saying, like, did he piss in his mouth? Like, what,
like, stuff constantly, he's kind of, there's, like, in that whole, like, climax, it's, like, every line is a is another one-liner.
And it's just absurd because it's coming out of the mouth of a fucking snowman. He kind of like waddles and doesn't like, it's ridiculous looking. Yeah, I kind of loved it. It's definitely, it was a ton of fun. I really enjoyed it. I'm going to go a 7 out of 10 here.
All right. I love it as well. And you know what? If we both love this movie and we know other people will love this movie, is it really a bad movie? If you have fun, is it really bad? I will defend this movie as a really fun like, movie. I think, quote unquote, bad.
Yeah. I think, like, if you're looking at it from like a, oh, like, does it have something to say or no, whatever? Like, no, it is just doing exactly what it attempts to do.
It's stupid. It's silly. It knows it. Constant one-liners. You know, if you're in the mood for 90s cheese, you really can't do much better than Jack Frost. So I love it as well, and I have the same rating as you, 7 out of 10.
Nice.
That puts us on a bit of a split, I think, because you gave Christmas Evil a 5. You're not so hot on that.
Right.
Christmas Evil's grown on me.
You were a little bit higher on Christmas Evil.
This right? actually, Jack Frost, I think I loved more the first couple times I saw it. And this time I was like, I kind of know what's happening. I still probably plan on watching both of these movies every Christmas because I just think they're both pretty awesome. But we have a split here, and it is very much decided by our online poll, though. On Twitter, we only got 2 votes. 1, we don't have a lot of followers on Twitter. I'm working on it. And 2, I don't think a lot of people have seen both these movies.
Yeah, that's probably fair.
So on Twitter, it only had 2 votes, and both of them went for Jack Frost, so I'm guessing that's Javi and his wife. I put the question, though, to a horror group on Facebook, and it was not close whatsoever. So when you compile the results of both polls, 24 votes for Christmas Evil got 69% of the vote. Nice. And Jack Frost got 31%. So, with me, you know, with the split between us and then that poll, that puts Christmas Evil easily over the top as the winner of our Christmas episode this year. I'll say this, though. I own these both on Blu-ray now, and I look forward to watching them every year. Chris, I'm guessing you'll see Jack Frost again at the very least.
Yeah, I mean, that one's fun. I think that's like one where it's like you have some friends over. You're drinking. It's like, hey, you want to watch something stupid?
If you got friends that are into like horror, like you heard me talking to my one friend earlier in the week where I was like, dude, no, you should really check it out. He's like, Jeff, I'm not into movies like that. I'm like, all right, stick to your comedies, whatever.
I mean, this one is a comedy.
Like, yeah,
it's,
yeah.
It's a slasher in, you know, kind of concept, but it is mostly a comedic film. Like, everything is played for laughs.
Ridiculous. Yeah. So congrats to Christmas Evil, but they're both winners in my book. That's why I chose them. Next month, Chris.
Yeah.
I get to go again. It's just how we structured our show. So whoever does December gets to do January again. And I'm going to kick off the new year with a different kind of nightmare. We're going to do our first non-horror films.
Okay.
But it is a nightmarish situation, and that is going to prison.
Okay.
So we're going to do two prison exploitation films.
I'm into this.
All right. So we have, first up, we have a women in prison exploitation film from 1974, and that's going to be Jonathan Demme's Caged Heat. I've not seen this, Chris. Jonathan Demme would go on to have the only Best Picture horror film with Silence of the Lambs. So
This
is him early in his career doing some women in prison trash. And you know what? It was hard for me to figure out what I wanted to do a women in prison exploitation film versus a men in prison exploitation film. It's not a genre I know well. I've not seen any women in prison films from, you know, these are like really big in the 60s and 70s.
Yeah.
So I picked this one kind of off of just, oh, I saw Jonathan Demme did it. We'll see. We'll see how caged he is. We'll see what we think. So we have that women in prison exploitation film going up against a men in prison exploitation film from 2017, and that is S. Craig Zahler's Brawl in Cell Block 99. That's how we're going to kick off.
Finally figured out a way to get you to watch it.
Yep. So, one of the things I've seen, and you know I like, the other will be new, I think, to both of us, right?
Yeah, I've not seen Cage Heat. I've heard of it. It's considered a classic in some circles. But
are you, are you familiar with the women in prison film? Like, is this, like, movie? Have you seen
any? I've seen some.
Interesting. Okay.
They're interesting films.
They're definitely, I'm assuming, of an era, so that'll be.
Yeah, like they're not films that would get made today.
Well, hey, we don't care about that here, and I'm happy to finally, like, you know, this is something we announced earlier, fuck, probably 6 months ago at least.
Yeah,
that one day we might get some exploitation films or just stuff, you know, stuff that's not straight horror, but we think that horror fans would be into, people that love genre films would be into. This is our first foray. We're going to start 2022 with our first foray into that with the prison film. I generally really like prison films. I'm just more familiar with men in prison films for whatever reason. So,
yeah, I mean, like, you know, Tango and Cash, and like, what's the one with Sylvester Stallone? And was Sylvester Stallone. But
yeah, the women in prison film was pretty much done by the time.
But by the time, like, I mean, there's like, yeah. You know, I think like Jean-Claude Van Damme has some prison films.
Oh, I love his one. Yeah.
His are good. I think Steven Seagal probably has some prison films. Wesley Snipes. Like, there was a string from, like, 1985 to probably, like, 2000 where, you know, dudes in prisons, like, having to fight for their lives.
And S. Craig Zahler brings that back in a big way with Brawl. I hope you enjoy it. We'll be back in 2022 with the next episode. We're going to prison.
Yep.
All right. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next year. Have happy holidays. Merry Christmas. Happy Hanukkah. Whatever you celebrate.
Yep. Enjoy.
We hope you have a good one.